So this is James Newberry, and I'm here with Ms. Cheryl Long on Wednesday, February 5th, 2020, at her home in Powder Springs, Georgia. And I want to thank you for sitting down with me. Ms. Long, do you agree to this interview?
Yes, I did.
Thank you so much. So could you please tell me your full name?
Cheryl Elaine Long.
And what's your birth date?
3-6-1950.
What are your parents' names?
Fred and Lucille Long.
And what do they do for a living?
Okay, my father worked for the General Service Administration for the government, which is located in Atlanta. My mother was a homemaker.
How many siblings do you have?
Okay, there were 8 children, 2 deceased, 6 of us are living.
Okay, and where do you fall in the lineup?
Number 2. Number 2 of 7, I'm number 2.
So tell me where you grew up.
I grew up in a section of Marietta called Louisville. That particular area is located not far from the Marietta Square, maybe 5 blocks from the Marietta Square, right off of Powder Springs Street, right off of Wright Street. And it's a section of town called Louisville. Lived there, born and bred.
Could you describe the Marietta of your childhood?
Marietta of my childhood? It wasn't a lot of flares. We had just modest living. We played outside. We were always outside. We had a school teacher, our kindergarten school teacher, had her backyard. Her backyard was turned into a playground for the neighborhood. This is Louise Burfoot. And she always wanted that to remain a playground for the youth and for kids. We lived on that playground. Softball, baseball, swing set, you name it, we were there. And basketball as well. That was our area. And from there to my house, you can almost like throw a rock at it. That's how close we were to that. And then, you know, a lot of times we didn't because there wasn't a lot of things to do. We basically played in our yards. We played together with the neighborhood kids. And we'd all, like, invent our own little activities. We have, if you didn't have a, you had jump ropes. We had old tires off of cars. To get a tire and to be able to roll a tire in the street, that was wonderful. Some people had, like, swings in their yards, you know, through the trees, the swing. We had a very modest, wonderful childhood. We really did.
Well, you mentioned your father's job. How did he get to work?
Okay, my dad drove to work every day. I think he had like a carpool. They carpooled to Atlanta every day. Yeah.
Okay. And how often did you go to Atlanta?
Oh, I didn't go that often until I went to school. I went off to school. My school college days were spent in Atlanta.
Did you travel at all out of Marietta as a child?
As a child, not really. It was not as safe as you think it was. We had at one time like a local bus that would go from Marietta to Atlanta. Like it was through Smyrna. Local stopped at every corner. But we didn't do a lot of going back and forth to Atlanta. No. At the time, it wasn't as safe as our parents didn't allow it. I mean, if you were going to go somewhere, you'd go with your parent, if at all. But Atlanta was not even one of the things even to be thought of, you know.
What do you mean by it wasn't safe?
You got to remember this, the years. I grew up, I was born in 1950. I grew up through the years of 55 maybe when we start doing things, 55, 50, through all the 50s, 60s. It wasn't as bad as I'm making it sound like, but our parents weren't comfortable with us out of their sight. It was more of the community. It took a village to raise us, and the whole village looked out for us, and we felt safer that way.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about your education.
Okay.
What was that?
It wasn't integrated yet, so.
So we also have Ms. Long's sister here, Cynthia. And Cynthia, can you tell me your last name?
Davidson.
Cynthia Davidson. And she may chip in from time to time. So she brought up that it wasn't integrated. What do you mean? Do you want to elaborate on that, Ms. Long? Or Ms. Davidson?
No, Ms. Long can do it. She remembers a little more than I do. Go ahead, Cheryl.
Oh, yeah, well, those years were segregated years, you know, where everybody had their own. We felt comfortable within our own rights. We had our own churches. We had our own, stores. We had our own dry cleaners. Everything we have, you know, beauty shops, barbershops, and we had our the different activities that were centered around Blacks, and it was simple as black, white. I mean, I can tell you some things that black water, white water, you know, those things, of course, thank goodness, no longer ever exist ever again. But but because we were younger during that time, it didn't affect us like you would think it would. It didn't bother us at all. It was just a sign of the times. And because it was a sign of the times, it wasn't like, you know, we were like, you know, how can this be? You know, why can't we do this and that? It didn't bother us to say, for me to go into a house and ask my mom, well, why can't we drink from this fountain? It never dawned on us. It was no big thing to us. You know, we just lived that life accordingly. And I think our parents made it comfortable for us. They didn't make I'll say my parents did. You know, we were always taught we were as good as the next person. Don't ever feel like you're not, because you are. But always, she say, but there are things that's going to be happening throughout your life that you're going to be you're going to learn and you're going to wonder about. But see, you got to remember, we didn't ask a lot of questions as kids. You know, we can get talked to and even scold, and we didn't talk back to our parents. You know, when they said don't do this and don't do that. Well, that was the end of it. You know, that was the end of it. It wasn't like now I'm sure kids will say, I don't know why we can't do that because, oh my goodness.
You had
to explain. You know? We had so much respect for our elders. It was unreal.
Well, one of the things that's really emerged in this project is that idea of, you know, absolutely separate. Segregated,
correct.
But a thriving community in many
correct.
Ways, for Black Mariettans.
Correct.
And so what interactions did you have with white people when you were child?
When I was a kid, around what age group? Not a lot. Not a lot at all. Again, like I said, we had our own churches. We had our own, you know, our own school. There weren't really a lot. Except when it came time to, I remember I got a job babysitting, you know, and then would babysit for white families, you know, and to us, you know, and that was kind of common. That was very common. You know, we babysit maybe like for 4 hours or so. We go into the homes to babysit the kids, maybe a little younger than us, not even that much younger than us. You know, where their parents go out for the evening or whatever. And then we, you know, we made our little money and we came home.
What age were you when you started?
Oh, when I started babysitting, I was about 14.
And do you remember any of the families you babysat
for? Oh, my goodness. The Mosleys. I know Betty was the daughter. Randy Mosley. Those are two of the kids. One of the kids. I don't remember. The Mosleys.
How much were you paid?
If you were paid 75 cents an hour, you were big time. It's between 50 cents and 75 cents an hour. But to, again, see, that's big money, really. As long as you can save your money, you're able to go to the store, say for an example, and put something on layaway. Took forever, but you could do that. Now, those are monies. And things didn't cost. You know, it didn't cost as much.
Did you go to white-owned stores and businesses in Marietta?
The Marietta Square, yes. We would go by, like, the Marietta Square was, you know, they had where you get your clothes, your shoes. Butler Shoes was there. We had McClellan's, new clothes. We shot. That's where we shot, on the Marietta Square.
Was there? Did you notice any difference in the treatment from you as a customer versus a white person?
Yeah, you were kind of like watched. You'd be followed. You know, a lot of the stores would follow you from the moment you came in to the moment, you know, you actually left. And if you almost had to know what size you wore. You can't just go into, like, say, for an exact example, a dressing room to try on several outfits. You kind of need to know what size you wear. What size, you know, everybody kind of knew what size they wore. So if you were to buy something, then you can kind of look at it, hold it up to you, whatever, but and purchase it at that time. Now, you're not going to bring it back. So you need to know what size, the perfect size, the right size for you, because they didn't allow you to bring anything back.
What about black-owned businesses in Marietta?
There were a few of them, not as many. Had a section of town off the Marietta Square called Lawrence Street. They used to call it, you had a lot of black businesses on this particular street. You had the pharmacy, we had a barbershop, you had like, we call them cafes, you know, I think Mr. Hanley Funeral Home was also on that same street. You had Ruby Haley and her husband, barbershop, beauty shop. What else was on there? Oh, goodness.
Cafe Don Killingsworth.
Yeah, several cafes on that same side. But it was like a strip. It was like from, what's the strip? Say maybe seven stores, seven little buildings right there together. We call it a strip. So, and then we had like a record shop, a section of the town had a record. You basically had your own. You know, it wasn't like, you know, we had a record shop. We had but we didn't really have problems, a lot of problems. We might have been watched and we might have been, but as far as being, we weren't refused. Okay, they took our money. Let's put it like that. They would make the sale, you know. It wasn't like, oh, you can't buy anything in here kind of thing. It was not like that, ever like that for us, no. I know that the Marietta Square was a no-no. We couldn't actually go to the little park and play. That was, you know, you go around it. You don't go in there and play or walk through it or anything. So
was that unspoken or were you seeing signs? I mean, how did you...
No, that was totally unspoken. Okay. It was unspoken. And we were just taught as kids, you know, what not to do and what to do.
Did you have a sense of what would happen if you went onto the square?
Not so much, because again, you got to remember, whatever our parents said do, we did. It wasn't, we might have wondered later on, you know, but it wasn't anything like, we might have got with our own kids in the neighborhood. Why do you think they say not to come do that? Why can't we do that? What is it, you know, about it? But it was never anything, nothing like that whatsoever.
Well, let's talk about starting school. At what age did you start school?
Okay, I started school 1956, first grade.
And where did you start?
The elementary school at Lemon Street.
So tell me about preparing to go. I mean,
oh, my goodness. Okay, we had, like I said, again, Mrs. Burford, the lady that had the big playground for us, she was out. The kindergarten teacher. So we had a little graduation ceremony, you know, get ready to be, we were promoted to the first grade. Little graduation, it was cute. And then, so that next year, of course, you know, we were all going into the first grade. It was a big thing. It was big, you know, we were told, you know, how to act and what to do. We had our tablets, these big pencils. We were so excited to be in that class. And our class, my particular homeroom class, my first grade teacher is Miss Flew Ellen. I'll never forget her name. Our classroom was right across from the cafeteria. I mean, directly across from the cafeteria. So and then we had fun. We, like I said, we were kids. You know, we were children, and we were excited to be in our own element. It was a different world. It really was.
So you said you had gone to a kindergarten.
Uh-huh. It was Miss Burford. She was the one, the lady. I was saying she had it in her home.
Okay.
Yeah. It was right there. Right. It's really, oh, goodness. From here to the end of the street is where she lived, you know. So we'd like walk there. She kept us, I think, for 2 years.
And your parents paid her?
Yes.
Okay.
It probably wasn't much, you know.
Okay, sort of a nursery
slash kindergarten. Correct.
And you learned.
Oh, yeah. Oh, she was an excellent teacher. An excellent teacher.
Okay.
And her husband was a photographer.
What was his name?
Raymond Burfoot.
Okay. He was a photographer.
Marietta photographer.
I want to make sure that the recording gets it. So, you're starting first grade. How did you get to school every day?
Oh, we will actually walk to school every day. And so, therefore, you have to remember, this is before they had built the underpath, you know, for the railroad track. So we would go and, like, you go into, you know what Church's Chicken is?
Yes.
On Powder Springs. Okay. That railroad track, right? I mean, right there where the railroad track is, that's the route. That's our route.
Okay.
We walk from, we get up there, we go across, wait for the train forever. We had to wait for the train, of course, you know. And then once the train passed, and we all knew, we're always in groups of four, five, you know, groups of kids, four and five. And then we were always taught how to actually go around the square, where to walk, how to walk, and be in and stay in groups and go around the square. You're going to bypass, oh goodness, all those stores not there anymore.
Go through McClellan.
No. We had to go around the square. Okay, you know what the middle part of the fountain is, okay? Just go around. We're talking about all the way around. We were taught, you know, when the traffic light changed and how to go around the entire square. Which ones? Do not go down this street. Don't cut through anything. Go that same path to school and back. Now, to us, it looked like 10 miles. But, of course, it was probably total 2 miles. But we were so young. We started walking at 6, 7 years old. We were walking to school.
Every day?
Every day.
What did you wear?
Oh, my goodness. In the summertime, you know, you just wore the casual look or whatever. In the wintertime, you didn't always have gloves. We used to use socks on our hands. And you didn't have the best of the best shoes. If you did, you know, if you had like a hole in the bottom of your shoe, you put the cardboard in the bottom and you keep on going. You know, it's not like, you know, you had the best of the best. But we had the best of what our parents could afford for us to have, you know. Especially when my mom did not work, my father just worked. And that's a lot of kids, you know, to have. When you're trying to do the best you can, you know. So, but you know, we were happy. We were very, very, very happy kids. Very happy. Nothing bothered us. Nothing in the world bothered us. We're just happy-go-lucky children.
Well, you talk about following the rules and knowing where to go.
Yeah, knowing which way to go. And I think that was important to our parents because if you think about, again, like I say, the signs of the times, you know, that there were a lot of prejudiced people in the world. You didn't want your child, you want to halfway know which route your child was going, just in case your child has not made it to school or your child has not gotten home from school.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of gave them an edge on which way, you know, in their minds. We're thinking as an adult now, I can see that being the case.
Seems very structured.
It does.
Did you notice kids who were just kind of doing what they wanted?
Of course. Of course they did. And I'm going to tell your mama, you know, you're going to get a whipping. Mm-hmm. And of course we told, you know, you know, because, you know, thinking now how dangerous that could have been for us, even for them, you know, it was just did everything your parents and your grandparents and all adults say do. Now, that's how much respect, again, like I said, the village that helped raise us. We were so structured. We really were.
Okay.
And I think religion had played a big part in it, too. You know, being from growing up as a child and knowing church, that church structure, too. You know, it helped as well.
Tell me where you attended church.
Marietta Chapel, AME Church. This church was in our neighborhood.
Okay.
the reason why we were so impressed with this church is because they would ring a bell when there was time for Sunday school. And this is a, mind you, you put your mind back on the,
oh,
God.
Oh, it's fine.
Put your mind on a dirt road, and we were, one block away from the church. And we would hear this bell ringing, and we were so impressed with this bell. And my mom say, stop running, you know, and they had, I always had activities for you, you know, in the yards and in the different, you know, and it was a big thing for us to be able to go to school. And that helped shape and mold us as well. You know, being able to stay in a structured
religious. How many days religious. A week at church?
How many days a week at church? Okay. You would go to the young people department, which is called YPD. Mm-hmm. They would have activities. And if you're in the youth choir, you could go for rehearsals. You know, and then like on Saturdays, they have events for the kids, structured events, softball games, different things like that for us. So it was exactly kind of what we needed. You know, we really needed all that. All that was, just, I'll say, full circle. It became full circle for us. You know, and then as you go old, get older and get older and get older, I remember the days that we, when my first job, when I worked in McClellan's 5 and 10 cent store. Oh, you couldn't tell me nothing. Oh, I was so, that was very, around the time that they were having sit-ins at the different restaurants. Drugstores, and, you know, that's where I worked. I worked as a dishwasher. I was so excited. Of course, I had this man, one gentleman that would not let me, and I graduated from the dishwasher to being a short order. You know, I could make sundaes, I could make sandwiches, and so, you know, I graduated from that level to, oh my goodness. I had this one gentleman that would not let me wait on him for nothing. He would never let me take his order. Now, nobody stays on one page on the newspaper for an hour. And not turn the page, you know. He'd wait till I totally get away, and then he would give his order to some other. I'll never forget that. Give his order to some other restaurant cashier girl. He would never let me wait on him. But then to me, that didn't make sense to me. But it didn't matter, you know. It didn't matter. Things like that didn't matter. We were as close as we were to the Atlanta area, with all the things that was happening with Martin Luther King. And, you know, David Abernathy and all those, you know, Jesse Jack, you know, all that was going on. It never fazed us that much because we were in our own little world 18 miles away.
So did you see any activity in Marietta?
Only when I was younger, much, much younger, and I didn't really see it. But down the street from where we lived, a cross was burned. KKK burned a cross. Okay, that happened, and we were immediately sheltered. And it was not talked about anymore. It wasn't talked about anymore. But that did happen in our neighborhood.
What were your parents' views on civil rights protest?
Okay.
And the leaders.
And the leaders.
Movement?
They basically, we had, okay, then let me go back and say, we had basically, say for example, we had our own leaders in the neighborhood, more or less. And a lot, again, came out of the churches, you know. But they were, my father was from Alabama. So he came out of a whole different world, you know. He was one that never wanted to go back to Alabama once he came here. Things happened to him, you know, it was a bad situation for him. They didn't really talk about it. We were never allowed to even hear adults talk because we had to get out the room. You know, if they were having conversations with another adult, even though they may be talking about what you're asking me about, I didn't hear it. We didn't hear it because we were always told once an adult comes and say, for example, your mom has company coming and you all have company, you go out into the yard and play. we didn't hear the conversation, and we didn't really, you know, like I said, my mom always structured us and taught us that you are as good as anybody else, and always know that, you know.
So McClellan's, what age were you when you started there?
Oh, let's see. I had my first job there. I was 15.
Okay, and that was white owned?
Yes.
Okay.
So I think it's, you know, the majority of the square is Jewish owned.
Okay.
And that particular store was Jewish owned as well.
Who did you interview with?
I interviewed the lady next door was our cousin. Her sister worked there, and she was a cook. And she just happened to be visiting her sister that day. And I think, I had asked somebody, I think I was asking my mom. She said, Mom, I said, Mom, can I get 25 cents? If I get 25 cents, then I won't bother you anymore for the next week or 2 weeks. She said, girl, if you don't get away from here. But my cousin heard her. It wasn't a scolding, but it was a scolding, you know. She said, well, listen, I know somewhere where you can make your own money, you know, and you can have your own money. You don't have to, you know, don't worry about it. She said, listen, can she come and work for where I work now as a cook? And I interviewed for the little dishwasher job. I was shown the ropes, and I was so excited. So excited at that little job. Oh, it was something.
How much were you paid?
Oh, hardly anything. Probably, I might have made for the week $7.50, if that much.
And did you go, immediately after school?
I went after school. Immediately after school. And then I walked up there, because, again, like I said, it's going toward the square. It was close to the square.
Do you remember the owner's name?
Oh, my goodness. I do not remember their names. I do not.
Okay. So let's return to Lemon Street Elementary.
Okay.
Now, you have to imagine that I don't know anything.
Okay.
What was the sort of layout of the school?
The layout of the school. Okay, there were several classrooms. Let's see, I know there were at least 2 to 3 grades. So there were at least 3 first grades, maybe 3 second grades, 3 maybe 3 or 4 fourth grades. They were like, you know, we had that many grades. Mm-hmm. And then that was all throughout the elementary part. And the cafeteria, like I say, was there. And we had another little area where we played. It was cemented in. It wasn't dirt. But it was a place where we go out for recess.
Behind the building?
Behind the building. Yeah. Yes, yes, yes. And then we had an area, we used to call it the annex. I think you might know what it is. Mm-hmm. You go out the door, you go up one or two little steps or something. It was this whole little strip of classrooms. I think that was the 5th or 6th grade
so
classes.
The upper grades.
Upper grades, school. Yeah. It was a little more than the 6th, I think. 6th grade classes, 5th and 6th grade classes
right.
were there, yeah.
So the building was fairly new, like 1951. Uh-huh. What was its condition? How was it kept?
Oh, let's see. I was there in 56, so it was very good. Oh, it was well kept. Well kept. You know, like I say, it was something that was new to us anyway. Like you say, it wasn't that old. I don't even know what year it was built. It was
51.
Built in 51? Okay, yeah, so about 56. And so I went there from the 1st through the 5th grades. And then from there to Wright Street School, 6th, 7th, and 8th grades. And then back to the Lemon Street High School years.
For the elementary school, do you remember how it was heated in the winter?
We had those, one of the things on the wall called, is it steam, electric, I want to say electric heat. I think it was electric heat. Is that what usually you see those vents mm-hmm. on the walls of the, it was electric heat.
Okay.
It was electric heat. Because we had, you know, we that particular building was, I mean, it was warm. We didn't have any, you know, if it was cold outside, we were definitely warm inside. We didn't have any problems with that.
What sort of desks did you sit at?
Oh, my goodness. I think I even saw, well, I can't say that. I'm a regular desk, wooden desk. We did. And up under the desk is, you know, where you place your books. And we had a place for our pencil on top of the desk, a long oblong thing for our pencils and pens. And then we had the blackboard, you know, the big blackboard, like a double blackboard up there. That was it. And then we had places to place our coats, you know, and everything. So it was, and then our book satchels. Everybody had a book satchel. But it was just a basic classroom.
What subjects were you learning at that time?
Oh, see, I wish I could have found my book. Do you know I still have my third grade book?
No.
Yes, I do. I don't know where it is. I didn't want to tear the house up. But anyway,
CJ,
actually textbook with my name in it. And I remember that book. CJ Run, C Dick Run, wow. Spot. It was Spot. Spot was a dog. CJ, it was that type of learning, you know. And then, like I say, it was each year we advanced further to the next level, you know. And so we went accordingly. And again, curriculum wise, I can't even imagine what everything was like then, you know. But we did what we could, you know. The way we were taught were by the teachers that taught us what they knew to teach us, and they were professional, and we were excited to learn. What, you know, we were just kids, you know, kids.
All the books were torn out, the pages were torn.
Yeah, tell me about the materials that you used, the textbooks.
Okay, the textbooks that we used, of course, they were from the other schools, and they were maybe if your name was number 5 in the book and all of your pages was in there, that's a decent book. You know what I mean? It's not like you were there, you got this copyright book, you know, that was actually copyrighted in whatever year it is. And your name is the first name in the book. There was no such thing as that. We had to use the books that were being thrown away from the other schools. Those were the books that we used, that we were given. And we didn't know any better. You know, we didn't know any better, you know. You know, we were told, you know, if you didn't have page 12 in your book, well, look on with somebody else. Somebody else will team up with you. And then the two of you all would look, you know, that person might have page 12 in the book, you know, so as they, you know, so it just became a pattern, you know. And I'm sure now thinking back, it had to be aggravating for the teachers, you know, as well. But those were the kind of books and things that we had. And like I said, again, they taught us what they knew to teach us. I'm sure the curriculum was not what they wanted it to be, but that's what it was during that time.
You mentioned Ms. Fluellen. Who were some of your other teachers?
Oh, my goodness. Did I have Ms. Jenny Hill? Jenny Hill? Jenny Hill Gresham. I had Ms. Owens. You talking about in elementary?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. Let's see. Do I even remember my elementary, my school teachers? I remember Ms. Her name was Ms. Cross. She was another one of my favorite teachers. I was her favorite too. Miss Cross, Miss Fluell. I remember my favorite teachers. Let's see. And then let's see. That's all I remember for elementary. Miss Weems was my fifth grade teacher. I don't remember.
What about the administrators, the principal?
The principal that I remember, of course, was Mr. Ruff. Mr. Ruff was our principal at the time that I was in first grade. He was our principal. And then later on in elementary, I had my Mr. M.J. Woods. I don't know if you heard that name before.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, he was one of them as well.
At the elementary school?
At the elementary school. Not at the Wright Street, which would be, I guess, 6, but what do you consider 6, 7, and 8? Now it's considered
junior
as a junior high. Junior high, middle. At the time, they didn't consider it that.
So he was over at Wright Street.
Uh-huh, Mr. Woods was.
You got there.
Correct. Okay. He was already there.
How were students recognized for good grades, good behavior, that type of thing?
Oh, okay. Just like the norm, you know, like you always had your smart kids, you know, you had those. And you had those that the ones that made the loudest noise. you can imagine, they were the ones that were always making the E's and the D's in the class. And you always had the ones that were trying to get their lessons, trying to be quiet, trying to do the right thing. And those that were being told, you're going to be sent to the principal's office if you don't stop the noise. You know, you always had those, you know, those kind in there. But overall, you know, we did good. We did real good. Because everybody wanted to be on the honor roll. Because it was exciting. You know, you want to be on the honor roll. You want to do the best that you can. You want to be the best at what you can be.
Were there like end of year ceremonies where?
We had like different ceremonies. We had like, we used to call science fairs. We used to have like a May Day activities. We've had, in our PE classes, we would have what was it you call that? That's how I learned how to square dance too.
You know? Like a field day?
Field day. I love square dancing. Goodness. Because I was one of the ones that was always volunteering myself to be at everything. Mm-hmm. They said, who all wants to? And before they can get say anything, my hand is already up. My mother used to just want to. My mom wanted to just beat me down. I know she did. But I was always the one. Thank goodness she could sew.
Right.
But I was one of those ones that was in science fairs. Mm-hmm. What we have? You name it, we had it.
Do you remember the hobby fair?
Hobby fair? That's probably what the... Was it May Day? It was around the May Day thing? Mm-hmm. Okay, hobbies as far as... It was something I was in. It might be hobby fair. Whereas I won the best dress doll. My mom, you know, made this bride doll, made this whole outfit for me. And I won second place. Mm-hmm. And that's probably what it was. And I was a little majorette. Whatever they had, I was it.
So tell me about then your transition to Wright Street.
Okay, I transitioned to Wright Street. Now, that is something I was trying to ask my classmates about as well, because that puzzled me. I was always wondering, why did we go to Wright Street? And then as I was talking to my classmates, they were saying, Cheryl, you got to remember where we lived. They were building, they were doing government projects, call them projects, Johnny Walker's homes. Okay, they were building all these government, they were about 400 units. Individual, you know, and so at that time, the same time, they were building a school, which is right down the street from now we lived in a house right across the street where I was living in the house, but we saw it being built, and we saw people moving in, and that meant it was a bunch of kids in those projects. That's what filled up that school down the street. And of course, here I am living, I can throw a rock at the school. Of course, I'm going to go there. My mom's not going to let us continue to go to Lemon Street when we can go right down the street, you know. So I don't know why that school was actually built, but I was, I was talking to my classmates, and they were saying that they think it's because of the way the government was structured in that area.
Yeah, it's interesting, and this is just, allow me this little detour.
Uh-huh.
Lemon Street seems so central to,
yes,
to education for the community.
Yes.
So did you have any sort of sadness leaving the elementary school to go
Of course. You don't want to leave your friends. You don't ever want to leave your friends. You know how you befriend people? You just never want to leave them.
Mm-hmm.
Never wanted to leave them. And so little did we know, they were going to be coming over there too, because they were being bussed over there. Little did we know, we were very excited then,
yeah,
to learn that.
But of course, you'd ultimately end up back at Lemon
Back State together High. Anyway. Yes, back at the high school.
Okay.
Yes.
So, you entered in the ninth grade.
I entered in the ninth grade, high school.
Tell me about Lemon Street High School. And we'll sort of do the same thing that we did with the elementary school.
Okay.
This building, though, is no longer there.
The building is no longer there. Oh, my goodness. If you all could have gone into that building. That building was we were so excited. We were so excited. That particular building had the library in it, had the principal offices, had the biology labs, the auditorium, the basketball court. Home economics was in there. Oh goodness, I'll never forget that thing. I had to do a dissect. Oh. What? He used to hate that.
Like a frog or something?
A frog thing. How about that? I had to dissect the frog. I thought, oh my goodness. But we had, you know, then we had like it was kind of sort of a language lab. Mm-hmm. Had our typing classes. Our typing classes were there. I got to tell you this little funny thing about my typing class. Ninth grade course. Okay, the teacher's about this tall. Miss Hardiman. Mm-hmm. Anyway, she the way they taught the typing class, like all your, okay, say for example, I'm looking at this, right behind her desk was the big chart, and it gave all the letters that's on the typewriter, just like, you know, QB, you know, we had to learn the keyboard, of course. And so so here I am with my silly self. The actual typewriters didn't have letters on them, because the mindset is to learn the keyboard. If you don't, you know the keyboard, then, you know, you kind of glance up there. And get, I'm raising my hand telling the teacher that it's something wrong. I have a tore up typewriter because the letters are not on the typewriter. Well, she says, sure, we'll talk about it after class.
I don't want to embarrass you.
I was so shocked. I got laughed at the entire year. The entire year. And that's the classroom that had all the big football players in it. They never let me live that down. Never.
Yeah, you don't want to do something like that.
Don't ever want to do it. Not in the beginning.
Maybe on the last week.
It was awful, awful, awful. But that's that. Those classes were held in that particular building. And like I said, again, we were excited. We were excited because we were again, learning of new kids that were currently being bused from the other areas. So you had Kennesaw, Acworth, Mapleton, Austell, Smyrna, that were actually physically being bused to Lemon Street during that time. So we were getting to learn who others were in the other areas. It was just like every day was almost like a reunion day. You know, it was just exciting. And then you started getting, I was always in a glee club or a chorus, in every one of them. Mm-hmm. I was always in one of those football games. Exciting, you know, exciting football game. We had our learning, again, the books. I can never stray from that. The way, you know, our books were, you know, we were still behind. We were behind on our book, in our books. But again, like I say, they taught us what they knew to teach us. And we adhered to every little word. We were just all up with, you know, we were all in it, you know, all, it was so exciting to get up every day to go to school. That's how excited we were.
Well, were there differences between the sort of city Marietta kids and the kids from the other areas?
Yes and no. Not really. Not really. Not really. Not really at all. Now, I can kind of tell you this a little bit. We were kind of like territorial.
Okay.
In that way, and I don't know why this was, but it happened. The sections of the black sections of town were named several Baptist towns. We had about four or five different sections of town that the blacks lived. Now, as long as you go to school together, you my best friend, I love you to death, we'll play on the same basketball teams, we do this and this together. As soon as school is out, you better go to your section of where you come from. It was so territorial. Why it was like this to this day, I don't know why, but it was so territorial. And we loved each other when we were actually around on in the environment, you know, the actual basketball team, football teams, everybody. But as soon as school is out, oh, you got to go to where you come from. Why that was, I don't know. To this day, I don't know why we did that, why we acted like that, but I don't know.
Did people?
It wasn't games. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no such thing as a game,
right,
or anything. Or it was the craziest thing to this day. And I hope somebody else talk about this with you as well. Because it was like that through all the grades.
What about class differences? You know, people who had, like, parents had a little more money, people whose parents had very little money.
You didn't have a lot of those. You didn't have any big eyes and little U's. Everybody was just about even keel.
Okay.
We hardly had any, you know, We were just about the same. There was no such thing as that.
Right. The situation.
I mean, I'm sure there were, maybe. But we didn't grow up with that.
So allow me one more question. Sure. On that line. Kids who lived in the projects.
Okay.
Versus kids who
lived in the homes across the street from the project. We were the same. Because we the one that never lived in the project. And we lived directly across the street from the project. From that house is my mom's house. It's still intact. 60-something years old. And we've always lived in that house. 64 years old. And it's still, you know, it was no such thing, no difference in me than my girlfriend that lived across the street. We were the same. Buddy, 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 buddy.
Okay.
No such thing.
I
didn't see any class differences whatsoever.
Okay. Did you attend, you know, athletic events and sports, things like that?
I did. And trust me, I don't even want this on the tape, but I attempted to play basketball. I was awful. If the Harlem Globetrotters were back then, in that day, mm-hmm. I was one of the original. And it's only because I didn't know the game. We played the game like on the playground, you know, where we were. I could, you know, throwing a ball up in a basket, that's fine. But I didn't know the game. You know what I mean? You know, if you hit, you know, you foul up against somebody, you know, if you. But I still didn't know the game. And for that reason, I was a terrible player. And when you go out for the basketball, you know, you go out for basketball, I think they expect for you to know the game. It was not ever taught to us. And the teacher and I, kind of the coach and I, didn't see eye to eye. So, you know, that was another thing. So, I don't know. I guess I was defiant. I don't know. I was terrible.
What were your areas? What were your areas of interest?
My areas of interest was... I was in the library club, we call the SLAGs. I was in the library club, home economics club. I was in every chorus, a glee club, a choir there was. I was in every one of those. Junior class president. I was always one to be able to walk to be able to organize. I was a main organizer. All kind of, you know, just special organizers. I was a biggie in that one, in that area. You know, we had our homecoming games. We had our, it was just exciting. When you're in your own element and that's all you know, that's the pride. That's where all that self-pride comes out at. You know, it really does. You know, this is our school. This is our this. This is our that, you know. And I always, it's interesting. Our church is, oh goodness, you can just stand on the porch of our church and see all the school, the entire school. Yeah. You can see that right now. So again, you got your church, you know, you got your school, and you got your neighborhood, you know, all of that was just full circle.
Okay.
Recreation center.
All in that area.
All in that area.
So talk to me about your awareness of integration efforts in the early 60s.
In the early 60s, we had a one of the girls that lived in our neighborhood, Daphne Delk. I don't know if you've heard of Daphne or not. Okay, Daphne lived in one of the projects around the corner from us. And she was one of the first blacks to attend, you know, Marietta High School in her sophomore year. Okay. It didn't dawn on us about our school even being closed and that we were possibly going to be going to another school system until it was our junior year. It was the spring of our junior year, and we were called into assembly. It was right not long after lunch. They had the Board of Education, they had everybody that was up there on the auditorium stage. We call it the stage. And at that time, we were told, the superintendent, everybody was there, teachers, everybody was up there, that our school would no longer be, because of the desegregation law, Lemon Street School will no longer exist. We will be going, you know, next year, you will be going to Marietta High School. Okay, to us, that was devastating to us. It was very, very devastating to us because prepared for that. You know, we weren't prepared for that. I had gone 11 years of black school, and you're going to tell me my senior year I'm going to have to go to another school? I mean, what was that all about? You know, what was that all about? So at the time, it because it happened in the summertime, and it didn't happen. We had a chance to, like, you know, absorb it during the summer. We didn't like it. We didn't like it at all. You know, we didn't like it. We were. It was just like a funeral. That before we even get out of that building, it was just like somebody was in a funeral. That's how bad it was. That's how devastating it was to us. It was the unknown. It was the unknown, and that's why we were afraid, because it was the unknown. We had been told in a PTA meeting, some of our parents were telling us that, okay, you don't have to worry about Lemon Street anymore, because Lemon Street and Marietta High are going to have the same accreditation level. You know, they're gonna bring your school up to be the same, you know, as far as accreditation wise. I think that's how they even said it. I don't even know. It was in the PTA meeting. Our parents were telling us. And so therefore, you as parents would be able to send your kids to any one of the schools of their choice. That was in our mind. And then for us to be told that that's no longer going to happen, you know, and I'm sure the Marietta City government went through a lot of ands, ifs, and they, you know, I'm sure, because that's where the decisions were made. You know, it came down through them, whether or not to close our school or not. It was a decision, you know, on their end. It was awful to us. It was devastating. Because our school was physically torn down, we weren't even told when that was going to be. We're hoping that the things like trophies and the band uniform, we're hoping those things were, somebody got those out. And they were actually, you know, stored or, you know, something, you know, because if not, see, that really just crushed us. You know, we had a whole trophy full of, you know, awards and everything. And so we don't even know what happened to those. And we've told some of them what may have happened. I'm sure not all of them. There were plenty of them. So, you know, just everything was just, we were just crushed.
Did that persist throughout that summer?
It persisted throughout that entire summer. Yes, it did. It was so devastating to us. Yes, it was. But see, then again, I'm going to go back and go back to that, because now, whereas I spent 3 years of Lemon Street, other classmates of mine, say for an example, those that were bused in from Mapleton, Austell, Kennesaw, they had already started to integrate the other schools. High schools like Osborne, North Cobb, South Cobb. They had already started doing that. So if you're thinking about it as far as a quantity of students, there weren't that many of us left, because the other clique, you know, I guess they had stopped. If you think about it, they stopped the busing, you know. So we were just the ones that's within that little range, you know, of kids that were left. So if you go back and say, well, they didn't have an X number of students anyway left. Well, that's true. We didn't, because other things were happening outside of the fact that we didn't even pay attention to, you know. So if an interview is to be, and I can just say this to you because I know that the last 2 years of our school, other kids, and I call everybody a kid. Here I am, I'll be 70 next month. You know, to be asked how things were for them as well. It could have been totally different from what I'm saying to you. Totally different. You know, some of them have total amnesia. They won't even talk about it. They forgot about it. They don't want to talk about it, you know. Some of them can give you an earful, you know, of knowledge. But for us to, like I say, by the time we absorbed that during the summer, and we entered into the Marietta High School the fall of 1967. It was September 1967. We were, you know, we were okay then. You know, we were okay. You know, you again, I'm walking over there. I was never bust. Walking was never bust. 2x2, 3x3, you know, we always just walked in a group. And but it wasn't really bad. Our entrance into Marietta High School, and I can truthfully say this, was as smooth can be. We had no problems whatsoever with the kids, nor do we have any problems with the teachers. I don't know if they felt sorry for us, or if it was just they knew that was something that was gonna happen. It was gonna be. We didn't have, I mean, no problems whatsoever. There might have been, unfortunately for us, a bunch of our friends did not come over with us. They chose to either get their GEDs from, I want to say, I don't know if it's still called, is it Chattahoochee Tech now? It used to be Area Vocational before it was Chattahoochee Tech. They had just opened. It wasn't even long. They were offering GEDs and other technical classes. And a lot of kids went there. Some kids went to the schools in Atlanta, to the night schools like Washington High. Some kids went there. Mm-hmm. So they went everywhere. They either quit school. They went to the Air Vocation. And our buddies, now these are your athletes. These are the ones that were good in track and field. You know, football players, you know, basketball players. We hated to see them go. But they chose not to, and they weren't made to go. Parents let them choose whatever they wanted to do.
What percentage would you say chose not to go on to
Marietta? Oh, about 20%. Okay. It wasn't a lot.
And then at Marietta High, were in the classes, how many white, how many black?
Okay, let me start with the homeroom. Okay, I was in 12J. We had, let's see, my brother, myself, there were four of us in 12J. There are maybe 4 to 5 in each homeroom. Let's say that I know they're like 12A through J for the 12th grade. So that's how they kind of divided up. There might have been more in other classroom, but I know our homeroom had four kids, four blacks.
Okay.
In the classroom.
And did you see that most of the teachers came over as well?
Not as many. Not so much. Not so much. You had a few of them that came over. I know Mr. Walker was one of them. Ruby Williams, she's no longer living with us. Not so longer with us. Coach Wilkins. You know, Coach Wilkins was there. Not so much. They went other places. A lot of them went back to the Atlanta area schools. You still had your predominantly black schools in Atlanta. A lot of them went back there. Chose to go back there. Not to even come. Mr. Scott, Lewis Clyde Scott, was one of them. He was over there for a minute. I think then he went on to Tuskegee to teach there. He had a few. You didn't have a lot. Not to actually integrate into the new Marietta High, right? During that time, no. Wasn't a lot.
What differences in the educational standards?
Major. Major difference. It was major. The curriculum was unreal. The curriculum, now that I look at it, being older and having gone through what I've gone through, was probably the best thing in the world. Very structured. Very structured. I think I took French. I took French in Lemon Street. I couldn't even say Keller or Teal. What time is it? I had this structured lab over at Marietta High, and I took it, and I excelled, you know, in it, you know, because the equipment you have, you got your equipment, you got your textbooks, your the way your guidelines, your how to learn kind of things. It was something. It was something.
So you were there 1 year.
I was there for 1 year, and I wish I had been there for more than that. the things that I did learn over there, and I can tell you on a positive note, was some of the some things that helped me get through my first and second years at Morris Brown. And it's because I learned a different way. You know, I fell in love with American history. I used to think it was the most boring thing in the whole wide world. Loved American history. But it was my teacher that did it. Mr. Anderson, you know, mild tone, didn't raise his voice. I kept thinking, what is it? But he talked to us like it's a book. And it was a book. You know, it really was. It was how he taught it. I loved it from here, you know. And in English, again, like I say, the literature. I needed that. I didn't have that in Lima Street. I had the grammar. We didn't have it, you know. And I can say I didn't have it. Let me just say, Cheryl, we didn't have it in 11th grade at all. I learned about it, you know, Shakespeare, Macbeth, and all this stuff. I learned about that later.
Were there students who struggled?
Yes. I was talking to them. My brother, as one, Willie, he had to go back and take, I think it was one class for the summer. He got his degree, you know, he got his diploma, but I think he struggled with English 4. But they did give those kids, not only him, there were several that had to go back and take, you know, and they were allowed to, you know, graduate that year with the class, you know, the class. So it's not like they kept them back. It's just that they fell behind. And in order for them to, and this is how they work with you. They really work with them, you know, work with us. It's such our class. They work with you enough to, okay, let's see what we missed here. You know, we got to get you caught up. You got to get caught up with everybody else. And he said, no problems after that. He said, summer school was the best thing that ever happened to him. And they did allow that, so. Oh, yeah.
What did you feel was lost in Lemon Street closing? And, of course, I mean, obviously being demolished. But
yeah.
In a more symbolic sense, what did you feel was lost?
Selfishly, just a sense of saying our school. Yeah, just, you know, and I guess I'm saying it from a black perspective, you know, the black perspective. We had an all-black school. It is no longer there for us. It no longer exists. It should have stayed. It should have been compared and brought up to. It was our life. It was really our life. And because that's all we really knew, you know, that's all we knew. It's really, again, you got to remember now, you can remember our little ages now. We're, what, 16, 17 years old, you know, kids. But so we didn't really look at things from a, what kind of perspective? I guess we were tunnel visioned in a sense, you know, like, tunnel vision.
At what point did people become interested in that legacy? How long did that take, and when did it begin to develop more?
For the fact that
the schools on Lemon Street, the ones that shut down,
okay,
when integration happened,
how long did it become?
Yeah, I don't know if you were involved, but were you aware of people wanting to commemorate, have reunions? Like that?
Yeah, there were certain groups. They did form certain groups that did want to do that. I don't know how many groups they had. I know they had one. And they were the ones that were responsible for getting the plaque. You see the plaque that's right there on that?
The historical marker.
That particular group I know for sure. I think Mr. Walker was also a part of that group. It really, I guess, you know, if you think about it, the generations behind us were so different. You know, everybody was different. You know, each generation was different. Like my generation, okay, you got your war going on. You've got, you got to get out there and work to you know. We were a whole different breed. I mean, I'm sure the generation that came behind us and the class, they were a whole different breed. You know, to us, it wasn't. We're okay. We're really okay. We kind of learned how to let it go. We learned how to let it go. We learned how to let it go. We did. We had to learn how to let it go. We did.
Can you tell me about your post-high school goals? I love this.
My post-high school goals?
talk about what happened between you and your parents and the decisions you made.
Okay. Started graduation night, of course.
Checking my time. Okay. Here. Oh, wow.
Okay, graduation night. Okay, like I say, that's the summer, you know, after graduating and everything. And again, like I say, I don't know how to be nothing else. I just want to be a student, you know, oh my goodness. Okay, I'm out of school. Okay, grow up, Cheryl. You're number two of seven kids. Grow up. Warming up, you know what I mean? That summer, I started working with Mr. Walker. He and I worked on the playground for the City Recreation Department of Marietta. And he and I, he was like my little mentor for the summer. I was his helpmate for the summer program that they had on the down on the playground field, you know. So he used to mentor me. Cheryl, you got to do this. This is what you want to do in life. You can't carry negativity with it. You've got to do this, and this. And in the meantime, my father, people used to go around and they had IBM class. People used to come around selling different things, like, say for example, like encyclopedias. You know, I'm sure that kind of stuff doesn't ever exist, because they don't have encyclopedias anymore. They got, you know, Google. But anyway, my father paid for a class for me, Institute of Computer Technology. And what this was key punching. Back in the day, they used to have cards like this. Like a card, and we punch holes in it, and that card with, you know, it produced data, you know, printouts, data, whatever. Okay, so my father would say, so he said, Cheryl, would you be interested in this? And of course, he'd already paid for it before he told me. There you go. So while I was working on the field with Mr. Walker, you know, the playground thing, I had an evening class. So the evening class, I get on this local bus that went from Smyrna, from Marietta through to Atlanta. The last stop right across the street was where the school was, Institute of Computer Technology. Okay, so I went there right before I went into Mars Brown. And so I learned that. So that was something I already had going. And so when I finished that class, it was almost fall, getting ready, you know, to go into Mars Brown. So as a freshman, of course, you all, you know, so excited. You know, you're so excited now to go into the school. And I don't know if you even know anything about Mars Brown. You probably heard of Morehouse, Spelman, Clark AU.
Oh yeah.
Right now we're not closed, but we're having issues with accreditation.
Right.
But we're still there. So anyway, you know, back in the day and stuff, then when I started taking my classes and registering for my classes, 15 people, 35 people deep. I want this class right here. So I had to stand in this line to get with this teacher with this class. It was a whole different, you know, going to college. You know, I wasn't registered. It was awful. I thought, well, my goodness. Well, anyway, once I got my classes, we just happened to be one of the classes, freshman classes, that were building this structure. Male dormitory on one side, the female dormitory on one side. So we were in temporary trailers my first year going there. And so, you know, so that was a whole other thing, too. I think the trailer was about this big. But anyway, so when we finally got into, we call it the new dorm, I was like so excited. It was brand new, state of the art, you know. But now my classes, as far as my classes, that's why I say that it came in with me having known about getting structured in literature. And it was really a repeat of everything I had learned all those 4 years of high school plus Marietta. So that we kind of went over, you know, my freshman year, that's basically what it was.
Okay.
I also took reading from Hank Aaron's wife, Billy Aaron.
Oh wow.
Yeah, she was my teacher. She was Miss Samuels, you know, her husband passed away. But she married Hank Aaron.
What was your major?
My major, business administration.
Okay.
Business administration. But the minor at the time was secretary of science. And that was like with a lot of office machines and stuff, you know, secretary of science Yeah.
How long was the program?
My program?
Yeah, how many years?
Four.
Okay.
4-year program, yeah.
That's Fountain Hall, is there?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That's Fountain Hall. Oh, yes. Yes.
It's they're trying to save it.
Yes.
Right now.
Yes, 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 yes. Fountain Hall. And then we have the the bridge. Everything about that school. But my freshman year, okay, Stokely Carmichael, I don't know if you ever heard of him or not, ever.
Oh, yeah.
He came through the AU Center. So all those schools, all the Morehouse, Spelman, Clark College at the time, that's Clark AU. He came through that whole campus, interrupted the entire thing, gamut. This is what we learned about the, you know, the sit-ins and the MLK stuff. This is what we learned all about this at that time because we weren't familiar with that. Like I say, having come from where I came from. And then a lot of kids, too, having come from South Georgia or different places, you know, they didn't know, we didn't know anything about that. So it was petrifying to us. It really was. It really was.
So would you say that most of the students you were with at Morris Brown were coming from outside?
All over, places I never heard of. Okay. Poor deal, Georgia. Montezuma. I had never heard of Montezuma, Georgia in my life. I had never heard of those little towns. Just,
okay.
I had never, I'm telling you, I had so many places I thought, where are you talking about? I had heard of places like Gainesville, Rome, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Cartersville. You know, these are places I've heard of. I've heard of Cardeal, Georgia.
Yeah.
Where's that?
The South Georgia.
South, it was amazing. Of course, I had heard of Macon, Columbus,
mm-hmm.
you know, Fort Valley. You know, we've heard of places like that.
Right.
But the teeny weeny towns, we had never heard of. And see, again, you're competing with kids that's valedictorians from these high schools that graduated from the different high schools. Salutatory, you know, these are the kinds of people that you're competing with, you know. And if you think about it, so that's why it was a different world. It was so different. I loved going to school there. Loved it, loved it, loved it.
Did you have any interaction with the Spelman women or the Morehouse
We
men
took classes.
The other, okay.
We took
Clark,
classes.
Yeah.
We took classes. I took a class, I took science class I took at Atlanta University. It was Clark at the time. I took a class there. I took a class over at Spelman. We interacted with classes. We taken classes all over. It was open like that. Don't ask me how we got from one place to the other in 2 seconds. I don't know.
did you know any students who were looking into other colleges and universities, like mostly white colleges and universities? Did you
at the time that I was?
From Marietta High, who maybe applied to...
Only my girlfriend, she and I were real close. She went to Mercer.
Okay.
She got like a part scholarship to Mercer University. She is the only one. All the rest of us, because I had applied for Morris Brown in Talladega, which is in Alabama. I didn't want to go to Alabama, but anyway, thank goodness they didn't. But anyway, she is the only one that I know that applied. Others went to Bethune-Cookman, maybe Tennessee A&I, Savannah State, Albany State.
Mm-hmm.
They went to those schools.
Okay.
Not necessarily to the white. Like I said, she's the only one I know that went to Mercer.
Okay. And what did you do out of college?
Out of college, tell you what, I knew I had to have a job because I had to pay back this money. That I borrowed for 4 years. So what I did was, I had two thoughts in my mind when I first graduated. I always wanted to go into service, military service, because I wanted to travel and see other things. Well, I wasn't smart. I didn't use my head. I should have joined the reserves.
Mm-hmm.
I should have done that right out of school. Didn't do it. So I wound up coming back home, because I knew I was one of the ones. I'm a mama's girl. Y'all knew I was coming back home. But anyway, I applied everywhere you can imagine to apply for. Everywhere. I know there are 50 applications I filled out. Everywhere. I had so many applications to say I was overqualified. To the point, it was scary because I'm thinking, overqualified. At least just let me work in the housekeeping department, just somewhere, you know, to get my foot in the door. Well, that wasn't no such thing as that. So I remember one day my mom and I, we were cleaning out the closet. I had applied at WellStar. It was WellStar at the time, Kennestone Hospital. Okay, by itself. They hadn't even attached themselves to all these others. Okay, so, and I got the, that's one of my many applications I filled out. So I got the phone call. It was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And the guy who was in the data processing department of the facility of Kennesaw called me and asked me, Bill McCormick, I'll never forget his name. Bill, he was the nicest person. He said, well, Cheryl, Ms. Long, would you like to come for an interview? And I said, well, do you want me to come now? He said, well, no, you can come tomorrow by 8 o'clock. And I'm y'all so serious.
You're like me.
You want me?
Jump on it.
Listen, I'm on my way right now. He said, no, you can come tomorrow. You know, so I was there. I had a 9:30 appointment. And so I was there. I guess they were impressed with me. He hired me almost on the spot. After I had told him, you know, my situation, and I had taken the class, the ITC, you know, that computer class. Mm-hmm. He was impressed with that. And I think that was one of the things that kind of got me in the door. Okay. And then from that, he says to me, okay, I don't really think this is what you want to do. I was preparing work to go to the key punch operators. So I'm doing like, this is manual. All this is manual. Add machine, I can do it. My eyes closed. Da-da-da-da. Balancing this and balancing that. Getting all the charges on a patient. Gathering every charge from the moment you come in the hospital and say, hello, how are you? And they slap that thing on your arm. Mm-hmm. They start immediately charging you for everything you do from your first sneeze. So those are the things. We had manual slips with charges checked on them, you know. So that's what we did. We gathered them in bunches of 50, say radiology, x-ray department. They check off what they've done to you. And then we get like batches of 50. We put them together and hand them to the ladies so we could get printouts of what, you know, what everything is about for your bill.
Right.
So you can be happy when your bill comes, you know. but anyway, so that's, you know, that's the kind he say. And then Bill said, he said, sure, you know, you really don't want to do this, do you? I said, no, not really. And then he said, well, I tell you what, listen, we got another position coming up, data control clerk. That was a step higher than that, you know. So I did that. As a matter of fact, do you know, I stayed in that department. It was data controller. It was my title in the data processing department of Kennestone Hospital. I stayed there for 42 and a half years. But now the reason why, unless I was technical in the way of a laboratory, you know, worked in the lab as a, what do you call those people take your blood, phlebotomist, mm-hmm. or either worked in a department itself, which is a clinical department or whatever, you know, I didn't have those credentials. I would have had to go back to school, you know, to get that,
okay.
to become a nurse. And high. That was the highest paid department in the hospital. Through the years, with technology changing the way it changed, and which it was not a slow thing, like right now, what you're doing now is probably outdated. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Everything now, that's how quick and fast it was going. And they were bound and determined to stay with the most advanced information that they could, the hospital was. And so for that reason, and I promise you, my mindset was, I'm going to stay in here for 5 years. I'm leaving because I'll have that behind my belt. 5-year experience. 5 became 10. 10 became 12. 12 became 15. It was unreal how quick and fast things start happening. And then you got to remember, they attached themselves to other facilities. Windy Hill Hospital became WellStar Windy Hill. Cobb Hospital became WellStar Cobb.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had, you know, Paul and WellStar. They started gathering and purchasing these other hospitals. Well, our job was, one of my jobs was to go out to train the people at the different facilities to bring them up to par, to weigh. And I loved it. Absolutely loved it. So that's really why I stayed in that department. And again, like I say, it was the highest paid non-clinical department that you could be in. Yeah, I stayed in. If I start working from home 4 years, I've worked my last 4 years, I worked from home.
So 42 years total. So that means, I mean, just recently.
I retired 2015.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I'm still retired too. No, I'm not. I'm good.
What do you focus on these days?
I focus on working and my civic activities, my church activities. I'm a part of all kind of community activities. I'm not as mobile as I once was, and for that reason I think the Lord just slowed me down. I was all over the place, da 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 da. So he said, okay, I'll fix you. But I still am active, because I tell people, I say, I may not have the mobility I had, but I got my mind. I thank goodness for that, you know. Yeah. I can plan something. I can plan a wedding for you. I can plan a That was one of my things I was going to be, an event planner. That was my biggie big. That was going to be my thing. I was going to use my basement to have the area. Oh, I was.
So now you do that, but more.
I do it in a different way. in a different format. Yeah, I do. And like I say, if you hear my sister, my classmates say, she tells everybody what to do. Well.
But you know the best way.
Well, I try to get them to take it over, but they won't. Mm-hmm. Well, you don't know nobody's going to take it over. Sure. Oh, goodness, I want to hear it. But anyway, but then, you know, my church activity is very much part of my life, you know. So that's what I do now. I did sing with the Cobb County Mass Choir. It was a community-based choir composed of members from maybe 20 different churches in the Marietta area. That came together as a group. We were the group. We sang at our very first NAACP. It's 1985 NAACP convention that they had here. They had just opened. They had just started their chapter, and we sang and we stayed together for 20 years.
What part did you sing?
Alto, second soprano, first and second soprano. We have more seconds. Okay, second soprano. First, second alto.
So everything.
Everything.
Well,
everything.
I want to thank you for.
You are more than welcome. Did you get a copy of our alma mater? Did you have is that something that you know who wrote the words to our alma mater?
I don't.
I don't either. But.
I can find out.
Find out for me.
Okay.
And I'll sing it for you next time you come back.
Oh, you don't want to do it on the...
I can do it now. Don't
okay.
Oh, my God. To our dear old alma mater, your name shall always be a light to ever guide us through defeat and victory. We shall do our best to serve thee, noble deeds thy will achieve. In sun, in rain, we shall remain faithful to Lemon Street. God speed your noble deeds, we honestly believe, deep in our hearts a glow will ever show. We lift our hearts in song, to thee we do belong, and this we want the whole wide world to know. We shall do our best to serve thee, noble deeds thy will achieve. In sun, in rain, we shall remain faithful to Lemon Street.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I don't know what that sounds like.